I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to take a look at Enroll Indy, a new organization that aims to streamline the enrollment process here in Indianapolis. We'll discuss how Enroll Indy got started, why it may be needed, and what it hopes to accomplish. My guests are Caitlin Hannon, founder and executive director of Enroll Indy, Justin Olemiller, executive director of Stand for Children Indiana, and Cesar Roman, an IPS parent and Stand for Children organizer. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Our email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about Enroll Indy. It's a new organization that's designed to streamline the school enrollment process here in Indianapolis. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Caitlin Hannon, who is founder and executive director of Enroll Indy, Justin Olemiller, who is executive director of Stand for Children Indiana, and Cesar Roman, an Indianapolis Public Schools parent and Stand for Children organizer. Welcome to all of you.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
It's good to have you all here. So, Caitlin, I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
Tell me what Enroll Indy is and what it does.
Sure. So Enroll Indy is a new nonprofit. It's a collaboration between Indianapolis Public Schools, the mayor's office, and the state charter school board, all of who oversee all these different schools in Indianapolis. And we're working to make it easier for families to access the schools that they choose for their kids. So, you know, when I grew up, when you grew up, you went to the school that was closest to your house and you walked there and that was it. And now in Indianapolis, we have the opportunity for families to choose from public charter schools, from choice or magnet programs, from neighborhood schools, innovation schools. And that's great for families if they know how to access those schools. But it's been pretty complicated up until this point. So that's what we're aiming to solve.
When do you get started and when does the program roll out?
Yeah, so we launched our School Finder in November. So our app and website are available for families to enter their address. They can filter on over 100 programs. You know, so if they're third graders looking for soccer and a dual language program, they can find that and whether that school has transportation for them. And then starting this fall, we hope to launch the Common Application, which basically means a family can fill out one application and apply up to 10 schools all in one place. Right now, every school has a different application and a different deadline. So bringing all those together into one place will happen hopefully this fall.
Does it apply only to the Indianapolis Public Schools District, or is it larger than
that? Yeah. So at first, we are launching exclusively with IPS, the mayor's charter schools, and the state charter school board, which is about 110 programs.
Okay. So, Justin, tell me why this is necessary.
Yeah. Well, as an organization that focuses on really empowering parents, especially in IPS, to really stand up and ensure their children are getting the best education possible, as Caitlin mentioned, it is a difficult process and system. It's not quite as difficult as applying to college, but it's actually not too far off. If you want to go to a school in Indianapolis, a certain school, you have to a lot of times visit that specific school, fill out each individual application, different deadlines, as Caitlin mentioned. And so it's far from a streamlined process and, frankly, just very cumbersome on parents. And when you take into account that there are a lot of families that just don't simply have the time or resources to engage in school choice, then you're leaving an entire segment of the population out, meaning that they are not empowered and they do not have the opportunity to really sort of advocate for their child and ensure that they're given the same options to look for the best fit educationally for their kid. And so that's why we think this is really important.
Why, if we're talking, though, just about one school system, I mean, to some degree, this strikes me as a problem that should not require an outside intervention, that if it is one school system, the school system could provide the common application or the means? You're nodding your head at me, Caitlin.
So when we started talking about this, and it's been over 3 years since the initial conversation started, we brought people to the table from each of the entities that I mentioned, IPS, the mayor's office, and the state charter school board, as well as individual school leaders. And what's unique about Indianapolis that a lot of people don't realize is that in most of other large cities, the charter schools are under the school district, but that's not the case in Indianapolis. The mayor oversees about 50 charter schools. So they are close to 50, and then the state authorizes another 10 or so in the city. So they actually aren't all one system. There is nothing that crosses over all three of those. Enroll Indy is really the first organization to bring all three of them together. Our board is made up of members of those three entities. And so as we considered how we came up with solutions for the problem that we were trying to address, we thought, well, what if IPS just did this and the charter schools participated? And that gave some charter school leaders pause. And then they said, well, what if the mayor's office did it? Well, then the school district's like, the mayor isn't in charge of schools. So Enroll Indy was a solution that was really come up. It was come to by a group of people saying, we don't have anybody kind of bringing all these parties together.
Caesar, I'm presuming you're the only one who, I'm guessing on this panel, I may be mistaken, who actually has to work through this system, right?
Okay. And in particular, working with families and parents in the IPS system.
Okay, but you're an IPS parent yourself, right?
Yeah, I am. I have a child at Riverside School 44.
Oh, okay. I used to volunteer there years ago.
It's a great place.
It is. It is indeed. So tell me what the frustrations are that you speak from the parent's perspective. What are the challenges parents face when they try to deal with this system?
Well, I think in education in general, John, it is a very complicated world for parents to begin to navigate. And so at times, parents choose not to even engage in the world of education. And so Enroll Indy and opportunities to give parents access to information is really the one key that allows parents to make great decisions for their children. Me as a parent, I'm fortunate enough to work in this space and to have the opportunity to gain information or to see different programs. But that's not always the case for many of our parents. Lack of transportation, lack of internet, lack of different resources really does not allow for them to be able to gain the same type of information. And that's why this program in Enroll Indy is so crucial.
Although they'll still need to have access, if I understand it, through the most of the outreach is still digital, right? It's cyber, or how are you communicating with the parents who need the services?
Yeah, so applications will be submitted digitally, either through a cell phone or through a computer. But we're working with nearly 40 community partners at this point, and hopefully we'll be past that by the time we launch the full application in the fall. So that, again, recognizing that the people we're trying to reach the most are oftentimes the hardest to reach. So we're working with churches. We have a partnership with Eastern Star Church and several other. We're working with community organizations. We're going to be going door to door in the spring, just letting families know that this is out there. You know, there are a lot of conversations about school choice, but what we heard when we started doing focus groups was, you know, we met with a group of Spanish-speaking parents at La Plaza on the Far East Side, and the majority of those parents didn't even know there was a system where they didn't have to go to the school that was right next door to their house. So we, you know, if we're going to have choice, we have to have choice for everybody, and that means we're going to have to do a lot of outreach and doing programs like this and having the opportunity to engage with local grassroots organizations is really the way we want to reach families.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about Enroll Indy, its new organization, not-for-profit, aimed at streamlining the school enrollment process in Indianapolis. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. So, Justin, I'm going to ask, are there other programs or organizations like this in other places in the country?
There are. So the silver lining in Indianapolis sort of being a city to follow up on some of these other communities that have done this before is that we get to learn from what they've done and some of the mistakes that have been made. So there are a number of cities, including Denver. I know Detroit's actually going through the process now as well, that have taken on this challenge. I will say, though, and Caitlin can speak to this more specifically, each community has decided to do it differently because, you know, one enrollment process can look like hundreds of different things. And so one of the Caitlin's challenges has been to really pull together these leaders and determine what does a unified enrollment process look like for Indianapolis, and trying to find that sort of happy medium that fits our community. And so that's obviously, you know, the process that she's going through right now. And I think it's important that, you know, we have parents engaged in that dialogue as well. And I think she's got the right people at the table. To your earlier point, John, about, you know, why doesn't this happen organically? You know, this Caitlin's role is really to bring together all these leaders and from these different systems. And there's no incentive without Enroll Indy to actually have them share this information and really create a unified enrollment process. And so this really creates the incentives to have this work, and then puts, frankly, parents in the community in the driver's seat for, you know, the choices that they make for their schools.
So where does the funding come from, Caitlin, for Enroll Indy?
So far, we are entirely philanthropically funded, and we will be for the foreseeable future. We committed to becoming to getting the system off the ground philanthropically before we ever ask any partner schools or organizations to pay into it. So most of our funding has come from the national funders who have funded this work in some of the other cities that Justin mentioned. And then we've been supported by the GLICS locally, as well as we're in conversations with some other local foundations.
Who are some of the national funders that you're talking
the,
about?
The Michael and Susan Dell Foundation. Dell has been in this work in several other cities since it launched. The place it launched was in New York City over a decade ago. The Walton Family Foundation, the John and Laura Arnold Foundation are the three largest funders at this time.
Okay. We are talking about Enroll Indy. It is a new organization aimed at streamlining the school enrollment process here in Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Christina has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Christina, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I actually have two questions. The first is a little more complex, and that question is, when I hear about Enroll Indy, I can't help but think, isn't this a problem that so-called school choice created? I mean, every time a child goes to a charter school or a voucher school, the funding that supports the programs that support quality education is cut from those neighborhood schools. Wouldn't it be better if we didn't need Enroll Indy because we kept our resources in our neighborhood school, so that people could rely on going to the school near them, the school that is sort of the basis and the heartbeat of their community, the way things have traditionally been and the way that communities traditionally coalesce around schools? So that's my first question. Isn't this a problem that you yourselves have created, and wouldn't it be better if we didn't need this by not having this so-called school choice?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Christina. I'll let everyone have a crack at that. I'll start with Caitlin.
So first, I would say Enroll Indy doesn't have a position on school choice other than if it exists, it needs to mean that everyone can access it. So whether choice is a part of the problem, you know, is sort of separate from what it is that we do. But what I would say is that families with resources have been accessing choice for decades. They have sent their kids to private school or they've moved. That's been the easiest way to choose. You pick up your family and you go somewhere else with better school system. And that is not possible for many of the families that live in Center Township. And oftentimes when I talk to folks who say that we should drive resources back into neighborhood schools, they aren't really necessarily willing to send their kids to those schools that we're talking about. So if they're able to make a choice to send their kid to a popular choice program or a magnet program, as many people think of them, or to opt out to go to a private program, I've said this to many people, you know, if you want to have a fight with choice, then that's done at the legislature. But since we have it, this is to make it accessible to everybody.
we'll pick this point up, I think, on the other side of the break, because we're getting close to the break right now. I would say to our listeners that this is going to be a lively conversation, I can tell. If you would like to join it, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Again, we're talking about Enroll Indy, which is an organization designed to streamline the school enrollment process. My guests are Caitlin Hannon of Enroll Indy, Justin Olemiller, who is Executive Director of Stanford Children Indiana, and Cesar Roman, who's an IPS parent and Stanford Children organizer. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. We're going to be talking about Enroll Indy today on No Limits. It's an organization that's designed to streamline the school enrollment process here in Indianapolis. My guests are Caitlin Hannon, who is founder and executive director of Enroll Indy, Justin Olemiller, who is executive director of Stanford Children Indiana, and Cesar Roman, who is an IPS parent and Stanford Children organizer. Before we went to the break, we got a call from Christina. And her point, her thesis really was that in some ways Enroll Indy is necessary because the people pushing for choice created a system that is so complicated and which lines of authority are so diffuse that you now really don't know who is making decisions where and how. And Caitlin responded to it, but it's a large and I think central question here and probably one we ought to talk about a little more. And to be fair, I have to do a couple of disclosures here. One, in an earlier life, I was the executive director of what was then the Indiana Civil Liberties Union of it, and was opposed to school choice. I want to get that out there for listeners so everybody. But the other part of that is there's a reason I asked for the national funders of Enroll Indy. Most of them have been among the most prominent advocates for school choice and voucher programs. So, you know, we are really talking about creating a network here to implement what is a school choice program here in the state and in this city. I guess what I would start ultimately, Caitlin, with Enroll Indy, who does, you mentioned that you have a board. Who sits on that board?
So our board is three members from IPS, so Dr. Farabee, and then two appointees from him, so the Director of Innovation Schools and his sort of chief of staff. Two appointees from the mayor, so Ahmed Young is the director of the Office of Education Innovation, and one other member from that office. One member from the State Charter School Board, and then an at-large member who is elected by the membership of the board. That's our board chair, David Dressler, formerly of University of Indianapolis and Cell.
Okay. So ultimately, and what is the specific mission statement then for Enroll Indy? How do you define what success is?
Yep, it's what you stated earlier, that we're working to streamline the enrollment process for families through three things. First, providing better information and equitable information to all families so that they know how to access the system and to evaluate their choices and make decisions. Two, the streamlined enrollment process, so the actual single application. And then three, and this is a part that I think is important to note for folks who are concerned about too much choice in Indianapolis, and that's to produce the data that actually shows what communities are asking for. So if you've got a neighborhood that has had perpetually failing schools for a decade and there's no quality option in that neighborhood, what IPS has done and the charter sector has done is to just plop another option in that neighborhood oftentimes and hope that people will know about it. What this will do is actually say, well, look, the people in that neighborhood are asking for this kind of program, whether it's a dual language program or an arts program. And so instead of just guessing at what a community wants, you can implement the solution that the community is asking for. So those are the kind of three pieces of our work.
Gotten an email from a listener named Tim. And again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. It says, this program seems like nothing more than an effort to divert students to charter schools. It seems the ARC organizers are being disingenuous in their real intentions and goals. So I guess where I'm going to go and ask this question, reframe this a little bit, Tim, if I may take that liberty, is to say, is the goal here advocacy for choice, or is it, you're shaking your head, Caitlin, and all of that. And I understand this is a difficult, conversation because I've learned in all aspects, few things get people more upset than the whole question of their kids and education in schools. So I'm going to ask everyone, and I'm not saying this to my guests, but also to our listeners and all of that. This is a show where we are focused on providing more light than heat. So we're going to be respectful. We're going to ask our questions in that way. Is the goal of the organization, is it limited simply to providing information about what those options are and not necessarily advocating where people might attend?
Yeah, we don't have advocacy anywhere in our mission or our core values other than advocating for the ability of parents to be empowered with the information. We are housed physically in the headquarters of IPS, where we share a wall with their enrollment center. And I can tell you the dozens of families that we've helped since we opened a couple months ago, 99% of them were helping them enroll in their neighborhood school. When they come in and they say to IPS, I don't want this school, what has happened in the past is IPS has said, okay, sorry, we can't help you. So now what happens is if they come in and they say, I don't want this school, they usually call one of our folks over. We'll sit with them, look at the school finder, and see what else is in the neighborhood. Half the time, they end up then enrolling in a magnet school that happens to have room or a choice program, as IPS calls it. So if next year 100% of people enrolled in IPS neighborhood schools, I would think that was great. We as an organization have no position on which type of schools folks choose. We just want to make sure everybody knows they have equitable choice.
Justin, I can tell you want to jump in on this.
Yeah. So, I mean, John, to also set the record on, you know, Stanford Children and sort of our viewpoint on school choice. So we work with parents exclusively in IPS. We don't have any stand programming in charter schools in Indianapolis. And our work is really exclusively focused on empowering parent voices inside IPS to advocate for their child and really push to ensure that their neighborhood school and the schools in IPS are improving dramatically. And so I'll just give you a case in point, School 93, which is one of the, I think, shining lights of what's happening in neighborhood education in IPS. That school has increased from an F to an A over the past couple of years. And that journey began, frankly, with a parent voice of Stanford Children parents that advocated for bringing Project Restore, this teacher-led turnaround model, to their school. And they were successful in their advocacy campaign in 2014 working with the district. And so now that school is one of the highest performing on the east side and has led in terms of the growth and performance in IPS with the latest data coming from the state. And so I only mention that just to indicate that, you know, this organization, the one that I represent, is exclusively focused really on empowering parents in IPS and not to pull kids from the district, but to frankly have a voice in changing and improving our schools, be they innovation schools or neighborhood schools or magnet schools or what have you.
And I should say, as a parent of school-age children myself, actually is going through the college selection process and understand all of that. The biggest frustration I hear from parents is, and I can't put this any other way, they're really, really tired of the schools and education policy being treated as a kind of political football that gets kicked back and forth because, you know, as long as, and I understand that the business community and the teachers unions have had a tug of war going on pretty much since we all crawled out of the swamps. But that said, they're frustrated with that. And even Justin, in mentioning the school grades and the school ratings, I mean, that whole system has come under question not once, not twice, but several times, where the criteria have been readjusted, all of that. And I guess I'll throw this one to Caesar. You know, a large part of their frustration is they just literally do not know who to believe anymore, which I think is a lot of the anger that comes through when we talk about this.
I think that when you think about really what happens in the communities that we work exclusively in, it's that a lot of times things just happen to these communities. And that's really the number one frustration that I've encountered in this work in the last 3 years, John, is that many of these communities are tired of just different things happening to them, whether it's education, whether it's different laws, or just different things that always happen to these communities. And so when you empower parents and you give them the tools and resources so that they can lead what you, as you mentioned earlier, is a very, very charged subject. It's your children's education, right? It is very serious, no matter where you live across the city. And so a lot of times parents just don't know where to jump in because there is a lot of jargon, because there is just a lot of choice. There is a lot of different ways in which they can educate their children. But once you give them that information, once you let them make the decisions, they will make the very best decisions for their children. I have not met a parent, no matter where I have worked, that does not want the very best for their child. And so that really is at the root of why Enroll Indy is really important, and why we continue to work in IPS, because really making the district a stronger place really makes our communities better and makes our city a better place to live.
And I should clarify, we had a question from a listener, too. I think it was I've been identifying you as an organizer for Stand for Children. That's a staff position, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes,
so you're an employee of the organization. Yep. I think there was some confusion about whether you were a volunteer or not. So let's take a step back then, because I hate to add to your mission statement here, Caitlin, but is there a way that we can take some of the distrust and, let's face it, just plain animosity on all sides out of the process and out of the discussion right now?
My own personal background in this is that I was an IPS classroom teacher.
Yeah.
I've been an elected member of the IPS school board, so I've been on the politics side of it. I have a degree in policy, so policy is my passion. And at the end of the day, all the moves that I've made, and I've taken heat in all those positions, have been related to the kids that I was working with in the classroom and trying to figure out ways to make things better. And I want to say, for me, and this is a story that I tell often when I talk about this work, but I grew up here. I grew up on the west side in the suburbs, and I dreamed of going to NYU my whole life. Mm-hmm. And so I applied to NYU, and I got in, and I went for a year, and I hated it, and I left. And because I was, I'm white. My dad's a lawyer. I came from a wealthier background. And nobody ever called me a dropout. Nobody ever called me a failure. All my dad's friends, all my parents' friends said I was finding myself. So I had this opportunity because of who I was, what I look like, to kind of explore and find a good option. And what we do right now is we have arts programs in the city and Montessori programs, and we have very college-driven, discipline-focused programs. But we're not telling parents that they have all those options. And so when a mom who speaks Spanish sends her kid to, and she didn't graduate high school, and sends her kid to an arts program, and he needs way more structure, or sends her kid to a super structured program and he's really creative, and the kid doesn't do well, and then she doesn't know who to go to because it's a school that, the buck stops with the principal and there's no superintendent or elected school board to go to, who does she go to hold them accountable? And how does she know where to find the right fit? That's what we're trying to do, is just say every kid deserves a place where they're going to thrive, where they're going to find a match, and we have choice, and regardless of what you think of it, the idea behind it is, in my point of view, is certainly to help kids find a place that they're going to do well. And so that's what we're trying to solve for, is to make sure that families know that there are alternatives if they're not having a good experience in the school where they are, that there are other options. And there are a lot of families who've known that for years and know how to play the game and pull their kid out and put them somewhere else. But there are a lot of families that don't even know that it's an option.
Justin, it strikes me, and we've done a lot of shows on school choice here, that at least one of the initial arguments for implementing choice was that it was going to increase accountability. That in fact, we were going to apply market forces here, and that if a school was not successful in a choice structure, it would just close down. It would stop existing. To some degree, what we're hearing now, though, is that because these schools are outside any system, that accountability is non-existent. So we've set up a system to establish accountability that, in fact, diminished it. Is that a fair assessment? And if so, no offense to Caitlin, Enroll Indy just strikes me as sort of like just trying to shove your thumb into the dike then, basically.
Yeah. So that's
the hole's widening.
It's a complicated question. So I'll try to handle it on a couple of fronts. So number one, I'm not a market-based reform guy from the standpoint of if you just build this marketplace and create choice, then all is going to be good. Because I'll say this, when I joined Stanford Children in 2013, what became very clear to me is while we talk about school choice, we don't have school choice in the city. And here's why. Because you have thousands upon thousands of families that have no choice but to send their child to the school down the road. And by the way, my organization is committed to working as quickly as possible to ensure and effectively as possible that school down the road is a great school. But too often, it's not. And so, but those parents have no other recourse because they can't drive their kid across town. They don't have the means to get them to another school. So they don't have, and nor do they have the information right now that they need to make that choice. And so that's what Enroll in Need is all about, is trying to level that playing field. Secondly, what I would say is there are great charter school authorizers in the city that have shown that they will shut down schools if they're not well run. Unfortunately, where I agree with you in that statement, John, is that I think we have too many authorizers. I think there are some public charters and other schools, frankly, in the traditional public system that, need to, frankly, be restarted or shut down, and the system's not responding. And so that's what we're all about, is ensuring that parents, frankly, have a voice to create the political pressure so that way the system does respond. Because accountability without bottom-up pressure from parents and the grassroots is not really an accountability system at all.
So in this structure that we're talking about, then, how should parents make their voices heard?
Sure. Well, there's multiple ways. I mean, I think, what we have seen, and I would invite Caesar, once we maybe come back from the break, to talk about some specific examples of how parents can get involved. What we've tried to do is ensure that parents, frankly, are going to the school board meetings and paying attention to what's going on there. Using their voice, speaking at school board meetings, whether it's a positive feedback about what the district is doing, or frankly, creating some constructive criticism of what they'd like to see in their school, but to stay in tune. Secondly, what I can say is families need to be in touch, with their principal and their teachers and go through that process to ensure they're doing the day-to-day, frankly, accountability with their teacher and with their principal to ensure that, their kid is getting what they need in the classroom. And so, I mean, there's a whole host of ways that parents can, frankly, advocate for their child, and I think our organization is committed to showing them the various routes they can go to do so.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about Enroll Indy. It's a new program, a new organization designed to streamline the enrollment process here in Indianapolis. Conversation is involved into something, a larger one about school choice and really about schools, parents, and children. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Caitlin Hannon. She's founder and executive director of Enroll Indy. Justin Olemiller, who's executive director of Stanford Children Indiana. And Caesar Roman, who is an IPS parent and Stanford Children organizer. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Enroll Indy. It's a new organization that aims to streamline the school enrollment process here in Indianapolis. My guests are Caitlin Hannon, she's founder and executive director of Enroll Indy, Justin Olemiller, who is executive director of Stand for Children Indiana, and Cesar Roman, who's an IPS parent and Stand for Children organizer. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Sean has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Sean, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I've been listening to, this afternoon. Great show.
Thanks.
I just have an interest on how are these groups funded. I think from what the one group that's housed in the IPS building, that should be IPS' job to make sure for these innovation schools that they're championing, and as well as traditional IPS schools are championed. Now it seems like they've all merged into one without the general populace knowing it. And our taxpayers, we know, goes towards IPS. Where are these other groups getting their funding from? Because to me, that seems like it's taken away from the student goal, if that's our purpose here. And then on another note, she made a comment that I find really interesting about Hispanic students and the artistic demands and the need for choice. Again, all these programs are being dropped in these communities. So it doesn't matter how great the program is if it's not meeting the needs of the immediate community. And so now we're going to offer choice to people who may can drive across town, but yet we're not looking at the root cause of the deterioration of IPS and not having funding dollars there to take care of the basic needs. So that was kind of shocking to me, but more to the point, the financial piece is always driving this. And I like to hear from them individually where they're getting their funding from to take these actions on. And I'll take my answer off air.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Sean. I'll tell you what, since Caitlin got that one first last time, I'll throw it to Justin this time.
Well, to be clear, so Stand for Children doesn't receive any taxpayer dollars at all. We're all 100% funded by foundations, including key local foundations, Glick Philanthropies, the Lilly Corporate Foundation, and others. So we don't receive any taxpayer dollars, just to be clear.
Caitlin, I know you answered the question once already,
okay,
but yeah. Sean didn't get it.
Yeah. It's the same. We're entirely philanthropically funded, so we're not taking any dollars. In fact, we're supporting IPS, giving them additional capacity in working with them in-house. So we're doing that at our own expense, which we raise philanthropically.
And, John, to the second part of the gentleman's question, so I agree with him that, again, my organization is not focused on sort of dropping in a high quality school in the middle of a neighborhood that's been, challenged for a number of years and make that have that be the way that we improve education in that neighborhood. Frankly, I think it does begin with the neighborhood school. And I think that actually this IPS board and Superintendent Farabee have done more to really focus on improving those schools in some of our neighborhoods that have been unfortunately long forgotten. And they're dramatically, they're working to dramatically improve those schools by actually having a continuous improvement, a sort of program and process in IPS. And so I think that is an important distinction. I just wanted to make sure to point out that the work that we're doing with Enroll Indy and the school choice environment is not at the detriment of neighborhood schools. In fact, there's more of a focus on school turnaround than there ever has been.
Josh, welcome to the program.
Yes, how you doing?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
Well, something that strikes me as odd that I've heard this before is the idea of the choice in general, I guess the market-based idea, being applied to schools in general. I've never really been sold on that concept, and do any of your panelists have any comments on that, the idea that we're making schools compete with one another? I'm not really, I guess, sold on that.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Josh. Caitlin, I'll throw that one to you first.
Yeah, I'm not sold on it either, necessarily at all. I think education is a right by birth in this country, and that we're lucky to be in a place where it should be available to everyone. So far, that has not been the case in certain communities, partly for a whole host of political reasons, from how we fund it to who's in charge of it and how we make decisions about it. But I agree that a market is, that a free market. And I'll tell you, the people who don't like Enroll Indy that I usually hear from are people who are supportive of a free market, because they say, well, parents should have to figure it out. They should have to work harder. I've heard school choice advocates who are upset set that were infringing on the autonomy that these schools were meant to have in a free market. And I just completely disagree that it should be up to schools to act as businesses and just, you know, treat parents like customers. Like, we need to support. This is a social service. This is a part of what you are, what you deserve and have a right to as a citizen of this country.
Well, and specifically in the state of Indiana,
the
Constitution speaks to that. Yeah, Justin, you wanted to jump in.
I would say that the debate on school type is frankly just a false argument in my mind. There is zero data pointing to that if you are a charter school, you're more high likely to be a high quality school, or that if you're a traditional neighborhood school, that you're more likely to be a high quality school. The fact is, in this city, we have great neighborhood schools that are working miracles every day. I mentioned 93 in IPS. At the same time, then we have traditional neighborhood schools that I've been in, and we have parents, frankly, that we work with every day and every week. And some of the things that they experience, frankly, are so disturbing and upsetting that you would lose faith in public education just by hearing some of their stories. And in the same token, charter schools. There are some great charter schools that are doing some incredibly innovative and successful things. And then there are charter schools that, frankly, should be shut down based on their performance. And so school type to me is not where the debate should focus. We should be looking at what does it mean to be a high quality school? And frankly, how do we ensure that we're giving that information to families for them to make their own determination, ensuring that there's a level playing field and giving them that information, them accessing it and being able to exercise choice should they choose to go down that path.
How much, and I'm going to flip the question back around here too, because, you know, I agree with you. Most of the research and studies I have seen show that in the place where school choice, you know, whether it's a voucher system, charters or whatever, by and large does not improve educational performance or outcomes. The one place, though, where it consistently does show gains is in parent satisfaction. Parents seem to feel better when they have more control over their kids' education. Correspondingly, there's a lot of data out there that shows the biggest variable in how your child performs in school is the level of parental involvement. So I guess with your organization specifically, Justin, Stand for Children, it's not Stand for Parents, it's mm-hmm. Stand for Children. How much of your effort is devoted at also challenging parents to take an active role in their kids' education?
Yep.
Cesar, you're smiling, so I'm going to throw that one to you. I was going to go Justin,
right. No,
but
Cesar's
I can see you're all but leaning in on that.
Absolutely.
One.
No,
okay.
No. Well, John, I would just say that really that is at the heart of what our work is all about, is empowering parents to really take that leadership role, that parent as first teacher, that parent as leader role in your child's education. That's how advocacy is created. I'm a parent advocate of a special child, a child with special needs. That's how I began to even begin to notice that there's a road to advocacy and how parents begin to have a voice. But it goes in all fields, and education is that field as well, where parents should lead that charge. They should be arm to arm, eye to eye with your school, with your principal, with your teacher. And it should be a partnership in which you're working together to make sure that your children are receiving the best possible education. One of the things that we consistently talk about is how quick 13 years go. When your child enters kindergarten and finishes high school, it's 13 years. I can remember as though it was yesterday, right? And that is how quick we have to make sure that our children are receiving the best possible education. So when they go out into the world, they're able to compete and have choices and options, because that's really what all of us want as parents, is to make sure that our children are having choices and options to lead the very best possible life.
We've got an email question from a listener named Rebecca, and if you want to reach out to us by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Rebecca writes, "My biggest issue with school choice has always been use of the term choice. Most charters in Indy don't provide transportation, so if a parent can't drive his or her kids to from school, the child can't attend there. In my opinion, that's not choice. It's only choice for people who have the privilege to drive. Is Enroll Indy going to also ensure transportation is provided to all schools, including charters across the city? Is that a long-term goal, Caitlin?
So it's one of the barriers that we identified in our study, which we published in 2015, and it was one of the clear barriers to choice in this city. Part of what I think has been really great and interesting about the collaboration across the three different sort of leadership parts to our board, so IPS, the mayor's office, and the state charter school board, is that they are not only having conversations about enrollment, but they're talking about things like building use and transportation. They're talking about planning for neighborhoods. So in the past, if a charter authorizer shut down a charter school, they didn't call IPS and say, hey, by the way, there's 300 kids in this neighborhood. They're going to need a seat. And now those conversations are happening more organically as a part of this collaboration through Enroll Indy. So while Enroll Indy itself does not, you know, plan on running a bus system, though the people at the table are already talking about how they could potentially do that and collaborate in a better way that does mean choice for everybody.
We're talking about Enroll Indy and school choice here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Sindhu, I hope I'm pronouncing that, has done, and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Sindhu, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. You pronounced it right.
Great.
I was wondering if how will this program utilize social media? Because, like, in my college, I felt much more involved when I have this platform that I can comment on when I find convenient, because I'm sure many parents probably are very, very busy all the time to be able to, you know, comment when they can.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Sindhu. Caitlin.
Yep. So we have a social media presence. And then in terms of reaching families and their ability to access what we're doing, we have a mobile app. So when we worked with United Way, who has done the pre-K program, something similarly, right, bringing all these pre-K programs together, they said over 95% of their applications, something like that, came via mobile app. So we knew that we wanted that to be accessible via smartphone. And then we have a hotline that's available from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And then via our community partners, those folks all have training on essentially how to use our school finder site. So if a family walks into any library branch in the city and says, hey, I'm looking for a school, all those libraries have the information and access points. And that's community centers, churches, and everybody else. So we're trying to be as available as possible at all times of day for whatever whatever people find convenient.
Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly.
There's certainly a chaotic mess in the school system at the present time, and I don't think, and that's what's driving the necessity for this organization discussing, but I don't think things are going to get any better until you get politics out of the school system. You had, why does a legislator become an expert in education once they get elected? They don't know anything more about education once they're elected than they did before. And you have them essentially setting standards and doing all of this testing and not appropriating enough money to actually operate the system at the same time. So I think there's some changes that really need to be made. The teachers need to receive a fair salary. And they also are professionals, and they need the support that they get, that they should be, they need the support to do their job well and serve respect for doing it. That's my comment.
Thanks very much for the call, Richard.
Okay.
Take care. So I'm going to take Richard's point and reframe it as a question here. How likely, given the fact that education at all levels accounts for about 60% of Indiana's budget, is it that we are going to get politics out of the system, Justin?
Zero.
Okay.
I can say that with some assertion. So as an organization that frankly focuses on, you know, the crossroads of education and political advocacy, what I would say to Richard and others is don't get mad, get organized. Because there's zero chance that the legislature is going to cede any sort of responsibility. And I agree, by the way, with a lot of what he's saying. I mean, just the fundamental fact that we are not paying teachers where they need to be. They're not being treated as professionals. We don't have career ladders for teachers. It is, frankly, a tragedy in our education system. With that being said, it's up to all of us to advocate, get out and vote, and drive that discussion with our legislature and other education leaders, because that's the only way it's going to happen, because the political system is not going to relinquish their grasp on education anytime soon. So don't get mad, get organized, and get active and vote.
So, Caitlin, it sounds like right now, and I'm going to cut through part of what's going on. Really, one of the reasons you launched in November to some degree is to do a slow rollout and debug a little bit. The real test is going to come with the start of the next school year for you. Have you set benchmarks for what will constitute success in that first go around?
Sure. IPS has been running a system, a lottery for their choice programs for a number of years, and this doesn't look that different. It just means there are more schools in that are available. So instead of only being able to apply to IPS choice programs, you'd also be able to add charters or other choice programs to your application. So we're able to look, and I don't know where they ended up. Their first deadline just closed this past Friday. So I don't know where they ended up, but we'll basically look to those numbers to see, how many people are even participating. One thing that IPS saw and something that has led to some policy change, one of which is that they're adding two additional application rounds for their choice program, is that their initial round in the past, which is run November to January. You guys talked about this when you talked about Heron last month. Mm-hmm. Low-income parents aren't thinking in November about where they're going to go to school next year. So those families
struggling with where they're going to live.
Exactly.
Also.
So yeah. Extending that timeline has been a part of the recommendations we made that IPS then adopted. So we'll be able to look at the numbers in participation this year and hopefully aim for that or higher next year.
Well, I think at that point we probably ought to have you come back and we'll do sort of a status check-in and I guess have another – if nothing else, these conversations about education, because people do care so much, always are lively ones, and there's always a lot of energy associated with them. I'd like to thank my guest, Caitlin Hannon. She's with Enroll Indy, Justin Olemiller and Cesar Roman, who are both with Stanford Children Indiana, for taking part in this lively conversation. Also like to thank our listeners for some great questions and comments. I am John Krall. We're going to be back on Thursday when we're going to take a different direction. We're going to be talking about cars, cars, and more cars. Please join us then. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cherzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations. We'll be right back.